24th chapter. Now on that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem, and talking with each other about all these things that had happened. While they were talking and discussing, Jesus himself came near and went with them, but their eyes were kept from recognizing him. And he said to them, "What are you discussing with each other while you walk along?" They stood still, looking sad. Then one of them, whose name was Cleophas, answered him, "Are you the only stranger in Jerusalem who does not know about the things that have taken place there in these days?" He asked them, "What things?" They replied, "The things about Jesus of Nazareth, who was a prophet, mighty in deed and word before God and all the people, and how our chief priests and leaders handed him over to be condemned to death and crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel. Yes, and besides all this, it is now the third day since these things took place. Moreover, some women of our group astounded us. They were at the tomb early this morning, and when they did not find his body there, they came back and told us that they had indeed seen a vision of angels who said that he was alive. Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see him. Then he said to them, 'Oh, how foolish you are, and how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have declared. Was it not necessary that the Messiah should suffer these things and then enter into his glory?' Then, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them the things about himself and all the scriptures. As they came near the village to which they were going, he walked ahead as if he was going on. But they urged him strongly, saying, 'Stay with us, because it is almost evening, the day is nearly over.' So he went to stay with them, and when he was at the table with them, he took the bread, blessed and broke it, and gave it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he vanished from their sight. They said to each other, 'Were not our hearts burning within us while he was talking to us on the road, while he was opening the scriptures to us?' That same hour they got up and returned to Jerusalem, and they found the 11 and their companions gathered together, and they were saying, 'The Lord has risen indeed, and he has appeared to Simon.' Then they told what had happened on the road and how he had been made known to them in the breaking of the bread." This is the word of God for the people of God.
Well, it seems like every few months, whenever there's a slow news day on the local TV, there's this story. I'm sure you've heard it before. It goes something like this. Local man sees the face of Jesus on his toast. You ever heard that one before? Or woman sees the Virgin Mary in a water spot on her mirror. For a while, in a Chicago subway, there was a grease stain that passersby swore looked just like Jesus. There was even a man who claimed to have a potato chip that looked like Elvis, right? It's kind of a thing. It really is. Like, people see faces in markings and swear sometimes that those faces are divine. Ever since I was a kid, I've been fascinated with space. And when NASA sent the Curiosity rover to Mars, right, this rover that had this really high-resolution camera on it and would send back these beautiful images like we've never seen before from Mars, I was just glued to it. I love these images and these pictures. But as you can guess, when on the comments section underneath, there's plenty of people who swear they see the face of Jesus or God or Mary or Elvis or somebody in the rocks and in the dust and in the spots. Now, responses to these faces vary. Some call it an interesting coincidence. Others take quite a deep and faith-filled response and claim that it was Jesus visiting them. Perhaps when Jesus was talking about his triumphant return and how he would come clothed in glory to every person, he just forgot to mention about that time he's going to go say hi to Carl in the Bronx first. But other than that, right, we have these fascinating stories of people who swear they have seen something extraordinary in the midst of something ordinary. In fact, as long as there have been Christians, there have been people clamoring to have some trinket or trophy of God. For hundreds of years after the crucifixion and resurrection, that was actually a big market, was for trinkets and trophies like that. You could buy, for example, you remember maybe 10, 15 years ago on eBay, right? There was a whole string of ridiculous celebrity stuff, like Ben Affleck's used tissues, right, on eBay, right? So people were like that with Jesus, right? Like, here, buy Jesus' sandals from me, or buy a, my favorite is a vial of Mary's milk, which a church to this day in Italy still swears to have, which to me is just beyond absurd, because I can't imagine that with everything going on, that was something Mary thought to keep track of. But what to do with all this stuff? Well, as it turns out, there's a name for it. Researchers with the University of Toronto and a couple of Chinese universities published a paper called Seeing Jesus in Toast. That's the name of the paper. And they're talking about pareidolia. That's actually a well-documented and understood phenomenon in psychology. And in this paper, decided to look specifically at religious symbolism and how it relates to this phenomenon. Now, pareidolia is this idea that when we see an image, our brain kind of fills in the blanks for us. We see an incomplete image. Our brain says, I think I know what that is. I think I know what that will be if I put some more pieces in there. And so if Jesus is really important to you and you're used to looking at pictures of Jesus and you see a piece of burnt toast, your brain says, I recognize that guy. That's that Jesus guy you won't shut up about, right? That's that guy, right? And so we see Jesus in burnt toast. And it's amazing how this works. And don't worry, don't be a test. You don't have to indulge in my nerdiness for that. But the gist of it is this. Our brains don't like to not have all the information. So it tends to take what it already knows and apply it towards information it sees, but it doesn't understand. God gave us this incredible brain, and it can do incredible things. Now, I'll confess, as pedantic as I am, I'm a little bit excessively skeptical of those who claim more than just coincidence, but that Jesus or Mary or someone else visited them in their toast. For one, we have no idea what these people look like. Their descriptions are not given in the Bible. The most famous depiction of Jesus, right, from Da Vinci, his painting of Jesus, was actually a homeless man he found on the street, and he said he had a nice bone structure, he was attractive, he was tall, he was big. He thought, that'd be a good Jesus. We brought him in, he cleaned him up, and he painted him, because Da Vinci had no idea what Jesus looked like, so he figured he'd just paint somebody and call it Jesus. And kind of for centuries ever since, we've been kind of looking at this Italian long-haired Jesus, despite him living in a time when men typically didn't wear their hair long and when men typically were very, very short, right? Jesus, if he was an average Middle Eastern man in the first century, would probably not be taller than 5 feet, which is kind of crazy to think about when you're used to seeing the big, broad-shouldered Jesus that we usually see in paintings. Of course, he could have been tall, he could have been short, I don't know, but that's the average, right? But I mean, the other thing is, besides just the fact that I doubt very much that Jesus is going to take on Da Vinci's form instead of his own, the other thing is that God, when God tends to appear, God tends to do it in a big way, right? Burning bushes, booming voices, tablets from heaven, prophets on flaming chariots. Burnt toast seems like maybe we should give God a little bit more credit. But it has me thinking, as I'm reading this morning's text, that we are, in fact, really obsessed with recognizing God. And that's a really good thing. That's for good reason, right? We should be focused and encouraged and inspired to look for God. Thomas last week was unsure if it really was Jesus. He put his hands in his wounds, and that's the only way he believed. Indeed, the women didn't immediately recognize Jesus when they went to the tomb. These people spent every waking moment with their Lord, and it boggles my mind. More so than that, it scares me a little bit, because I don't think I have faith as great as the apostles. I don't think I'm as close to Jesus as the apostles were. They spent every waking moment walking with him, and they didn't recognize him. So how does that bode for me and for us? I think this is on purpose. I think there's a reason the story is recorded of the disciples failing to recognize Jesus on the road to Emmaus. Listen to this. Just like our brains tend to fill in the blanks when it sees something and it doesn't understand, sometimes our brains stop comprehending when we stop looking. It goes both ways. If we want something to be true, if we look hard enough, we'll find it. But if we're not looking for something, we're more likely to miss it. So these disciples, they're walking on the road to Emmaus. We might ask why on earth they wouldn't recognize Jesus. Well, where exactly did these disciples expect Jesus to be? Depending on which one they were and what they had experienced, they either expected him to be sealed in a tomb or his body stolen and carried off somewhere else. Remember, the whole concept of an afterlife was something that Jews in the first century were debating over quite greatly, and they weren't even sure about. Jesus preached it quite fervently, right? That was a big deal for Jesus. But if Jesus had died on the cross, maybe he was wrong about that. Maybe he was just dead. They weren't looking for Jesus because they were convinced that they would never find Jesus, that Jesus couldn't be there. And so Jesus finds them on a path and walks with them. I kind of almost imagine Jesus having a sense of humor. I think he did. I think he's messing with them a little bit. Right? I know this passage seems very reverent, but I think he's messing with them. Because he walks by and he says, "Hey, what are you guys talking about?" They said, "What do you mean, what are we talking about? Have you not been in Jerusalem in the last week?" He's like, "Eh, I've been around. What's happening?" You know? And they say, "Well, this is what happened. Jesus, this prophet." And right, then he starts to get mad, right? Because like he's expecting them to say some good things. And he says, "Jesus, our prophet, our teacher, died. Rome won. They killed him. They succeeded. We're escaping now because this terrible, terrible thing happened." And right, what does Jesus say? "Are you dull? Right, you idiot? That was supposed to happen. He told you like 100 times it was going to happen. Right? He told you this was going to happen, and now it happened, and now you're walking down the Emmaus Road not knowing why it happened. This was supposed to happen." And so then it says that he interpreted the scriptures for them, right? And they believed him, right? They're like, "Oh, yeah, this makes sense. I see now where Elijah was talking about Jesus' death on the cross, not about him coming back as a warrior king. I see now how the prophets led to the cross and not to what we thought was going to happen," right? Because in this moment, the disciples still believed that the purpose of Jesus was to overthrow their enemies. That Jesus was going to come as a king in the literal sense. Like he was going to be on a throne commanding an army, ending Rome forever. There was going to be no more persecution of the Jews by the hands of Rome because Jesus was there to protect them. And that didn't happen. Jesus, though they didn't recognize him yet, interprets it for them. And then they sit down. And they have a meal, and Jesus blesses the bread and breaks it. And you can kind of just imagine them looking at each other. Like, "Oh, crap," right? This is Jesus. This is our rabbi. This is our master. This whole time, it was him. This church today has kind of adopted a bit of an interesting model, a model by which we seek something that isn't Jesus in times. And as a result, we miss Jesus. We're kind of in a consumer world of the church. One of the things that amazes me is in the church in Acts, how different it was from the church today. It wasn't about programs or having the right songs. In fact, pews didn't even exist for about 1,000 years. So if you, you know, the next time I preach a little longer than I maybe should, just remember that if you were 1,000 years older, you'd be standing up for a 4-hour service with no instruments and singing all of the chants and hymns yourself. But indeed, the church has evolved in some ways for the better and in some ways, not for the better. One of those ways is this kind of capitalist model of the church whereby the best product wins and we're all focused on trying to create the best product. We're all focused on trying to sell something to our community as opposed to trying to point ourselves towards Jesus. When we come into church looking for something that isn't Jesus, we'll miss Jesus. We come to church and we put our faith in the institution. We put our faith in the building. We put our faith in our favorite hymns. We put our faith in the things that aren't Jesus, that are fleeting, that aren't going to last forever and don't have to last forever. These things are tools, wonderful, incredible tools. Everything from our fellow Christians to our pews to our building to the music to everything is just a tool that will last today and be gone tomorrow. But God and the gospel are the things that are the church eternal. So as with every text we read in the scriptures, we're left with a question. What are we supposed to do about it? Well, friends, on Easter I said that we're a what's next church. A church that gets excited, that does something great, and then asks what's next. I believe firmly that a what's next attitude is one way to get out of the rut of institutionalism and into the work of the gospel. When you're never satisfied with right now, when you never stick around long enough to become more important than it ever should have been, I also believe that we as Christians should be eternally hungry for the gospel, never satisfied, never having enough. And that means serving people, loving people, and sharing the gifts we've been given. This all happens when we turn ourselves inside out, when we come to church to be equipped, to be sent out to serve God. That's how we seek God every day. That's how we look for Jesus. That's how we don't find ourselves, which is easy to do. Friends, it's tempting to look at the disciples and say, "Gosh, those guys were dull. How could they not recognize Jesus?" It's a little scarier to say, how in my life am I just on the Emmaus Road? How in my life have I gotten to a point where it's just mundane, where I'm just walking down the road, where I'm just doing what I always do, so much so that if Jesus himself walked alongside me, I'd be too busy to recognize him, too worried about things that don't matter, too focused on conflicts that I don't need to have, too convinced of myself and my own understandings and interpretations that even Jesus couldn't give me an alternative point of view. Seeking Jesus every single day is what it means to be a Christian, and that's easier said than done. This is a profoundly important lesson learned on the Emmaus Road. The proximity of Jesus and the disciples, the hours they spent walking along the road talking about faith with their rabbi and failing to recognize him, make us uncomfortable. It really should. I know that I am not a person of faith greater than the apostles, so great that I would recognize Jesus in ways that they wouldn't. And that scares me because I don't ever want to be face-to-face with Jesus, failing to recognize him. So here's what I'm going to do, and I'm going to invite you to do this with me. First, to be present. I am convinced that it's no coincidence that Jesus didn't appear to his disciples in a synagogue. Not because the synagogue wasn't important, right? The disciples continued to worship because it was critically important and because that was the place where they got equipped to mission. But Jesus appeared to them amongst the people because that's where the Christians are supposed to be. All too often in our Christian society, right, we try to make our own version of society. We want our own version of everything. We want to separate ourselves from the rest of the world, and that misses the entire point. First, being present wherever there is injustice, being present wherever there is hurting, wherever there is hunger, wherever there is need, being present there is where we'll find Jesus. Seeking God happens through prayer, something that I'm convinced Christians don't do enough of. I don't do enough of, and I think most of you don't do enough of, right? Because it's something we don't do as Christians as well as we should. If we do it really well, we might have like times of day where we always pray, but even that becomes mundane. Is prayer a part of who we are, not just something we do? And the final point is through action. Now, if we've reached a point where we think we've found God or we've got it all figured out, we've lost. Seeking God is a lifelong process. One of my favorite things about John Wesley, the founder of Methodism, is his principle of Christian perfection. Not that it was something that could be obtained, but that it was something you strive for. That Christianity is a journey, not a destination. It's not fire insurance. It's not keeping you out of keeping you in heaven. It's nothing about that. It's all about working every day to become more like Christ. And when we work every day to become more like Christ, suddenly we find God in the midst. My prayer for myself and for all of you is that as we gather together, we'd hone our faith and each other each and every day. So that when we find ourselves on the Emmaus Road, Jesus wouldn't be able to sneak up on us because we were looking for him. That we wouldn't be able to go a whole day alongside Jesus without recognizing him because each and every moment we're seeking Jesus. We're praying, we're studying, and we're working for God, honing ourselves so that we'd be able to recognize the risen Christ and we'd be able to get to work. Amen.